हरिः
In verse 11, Srila Sutta Goswami has completed his answers to two of Shonakarishi's questions. One, from where did Sukadeva's father, Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas, get the inspiration to compile the Bhagavatam, even after he had compiled a vast amount of Vedic literature? The second question was asked in 143. And two, Srila Sutta Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased with his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature, Srimad Bhagavatam? This question was asked in 179. Right, so then, in other words, from the spiritual master, Vyasadeva is getting his inspiration, and that Sukadeva Goswami is getting the inspiration because the Bhagavatam, being a transcendental literature, then even the Paramahamsas are attracted to it. That's the nice thing about it.
It doesn't mean to be pleased with his own self.
He's satisfied in the realization of the Atma, the self. Because when we say we're pleased with ourself, we're pleased with something we've done with the body or mind or intelligence. But here it means that he's pleased with the soul. I mean, so he has no identification or need in connection with the gross or subtle body. Does that make sense? You know, another way of saying is he's situated in the self. Or, you know, you understand there's these kind of terms. So this is another term. Sorry?
Connected to Krishna, that is in devotion
too? No, the point being here is that since he's self-realized, then why would he need to study?
Yes.
Right? Because from studying, you become self-realized. Right. So he's already self-realized, why would he need to study?
Yes.
But the point is the Bhagavatam, being a transcendental literature, being Krishna himself, is so pleasing that even those on the liberated platform, they're attracted also. So that's what's so perfect about devotional service. It is the process. It is the goal. Right? Everything else, you have the process and the goal. They're two separate things. Once you get the goal, you don't need the process. Does that make sense? But here, that's what's being pointed out that's so special about this. Because otherwise, they're great personalities, and so then they're wondering, why would he go through the tree? He's already self-realized. Why would he come and study?
Yes.
Like that. Yes.
Can we say that the Bhagavatam is Krishna as Bhagavan, and the other Vedic literatures are like lesser manifestations? Or?
They're lesser manifestation, but it's all talking about Bhagavan.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Like that. But it means you want to make connections, but you want to be careful about that the connection is something that will create an external view of it.
Yeah.
Like, because you notice as we've come up sometimes in the questions that there's a doubt because someone said something that's focusing on that external aspect. Though true, but it's just the balance gets it's adjusted. Because the point is that they're less because they don't exclusively talk about devotional service and the Supreme Lord. So they mention it.
Yeah.
So it's not, but it just means the Lord's more hidden in these other scriptures. Like that. Does that make sense? Because really, there's no difference between Krishna and his creation. Right? So it's just a matter of being able to appreciate that. So Bhagavatam allows one to appreciate that. While the other literatures, they talk about it, but there's a good chance you get distracted by karma or jnana. You know, basically, it's a pretty like 99.9% chance. You know,
yes.
Right? You just look at it.
On a good basis.
1.2 billion people distracted yes. by. you know what I'm saying?
Then there's the rest.
Yeah, and then you see anybody else who's come in contact. They're basically all impersonalists. Right, all the New Age, anything like that. They're all impersonalists. Right, so that's just automatic. Right. So that's Narad Muni's point: is you're not bringing out the actual essence, which is about the glories of the Lord. Right, like that. So the other ones would be about Vishnu, right? But this one is about Swayam Krishna. That's why Bhagavatam can bewilder Vyasadeva, who's a plenary expansion. You understand?
Yes.
You know, just like Balaram doesn't always know what Krishna's doing. He can tell something's up.
Yes.
But he can't tell what. Yes. You know, so Balaram comes up and says, okay, what's going on? You know, like that. And then Krishna, laughs and reveals it. So in the same way, then Bhagavatam, is able to bewilder Vyasadeva. And then has to be revealed by his spiritual master. Right? Even though he's the Lord himself. Okay. Verses 12 to 58. The capture and punishment of Ashwatthama. Just thinking. Yes. Yeah.
House of stories.
Seven chapters of... Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 1.7.12, the question of how a great yogi like Sukadeva became inclined to hear Bhagavatam has now been answered. Now the other question of how Parikit heard the Bhagavatam while fasting until death and other topics such as his astonishing birth will be explained. Right? Because before that they had already asked in the beginning of the six questions, or not, he's actually after the six questions, how is this Bhagavatam spoken? Right? And so then, how did it come to pass? So then first you have to answer the elements about Vyasadeva, his realization by Narad Muni, then Sukadeva's attraction to the Bhagavatam, his learning of the Bhagavatam. Right? So that's it spoken. But now here comes the history. Right? Because first it was, written there, but then the point is how was it spoken? How did they meet? How did all this happen? So now this will start. So this will now basically, what is it? 11 chapters, like that. Or 12 chapters, like that. So, okay. Sutta Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shonaka. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of Lord Sri Krishna and topics of the birth, activities, and deliverance of King Parikit, the sage amongst kings, as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu. After the Pandava, it's interesting, the worldly order, so it means grihastha ashram, that's the worldly order, right? Because then you're of the world, you can move in the world, you have that freedom, right? Brahmacharis are restricted, sannyasis are restricted, vanaprasthas just don't get involved. So the worldly order, right? Interesting, right? Interesting term. After the Pandava and Kaurava warriors had been killed at Kurukshetra, thus attaining their deserved destinations, and after Duryodhana had fallen to the ground, his thighs broken by Bhima's club, the son of Drona, Ashwatthama, beheaded Draupadi's five sons while they were sleeping. Ashwatthama presented the severed heads as a prize to Duryodhana, foolishly thinking that he would be very pleased. The son of Dhritarashtra greatly disapproved of the heinous act, however. Right. So it's not that means he disapproved on the principle that the point is that the Kauravas should be ruling the world, right? It means his dynasty, so he's going to be very much, one would naturally come to the conclusion that Duryodhana is on the bodily platform, right? That seems to be a strong, element in his thought pattern. But that means his dynasty would be. So because he's a Kshatriya, so there is the elements of duty in that. His weakness is he doesn't like the Pandavas. And because of that, he's not surrendering to the Lord, because you only know the Lord through the devotees. If he was nice to the Pandavas, then he also would have known Krishna. But he's not, so he doesn't. So, but other than that, as far as administration, we never hear any complaints about his administration. So he knows how to be an emperor of the world. He's that qualified. So naturally, then, since it has to be done, the emperorship should go on. Otherwise, the whole planet falls apart and goes into all little wars. Like now, there's like hundreds of wars going on at any moment because there's not an emperor holding it together, right? So that aspect is there. You need an emperor. Two is that if there's going to be an emperor, why not his line? Right? His point was, in his line, since there's going to be emperorship, why not him? That's the point, you know. Why the Pandavas? Right? But since, he's going to die, and the Pandavas are older, okay, they'll run. But the point is, who's going to be next? Because he's killed, all of, anyone connected to his killed. So therefore, the line should go down to Yudhishthira. Right? Because the Kauravas should lead. Because generally it's always the Sun dynasty leads. It's very rare the Moon dynasty. Vikramaditya, then he was very prominent. He became emperor. But it's rare. Right? Krishna, they're Moon dynasty, but they didn't take the position of emperor. Right? They basically stay away from everybody else who went and sat on an island so they can enjoy their transcendental pastimes. Right? Otherwise, Mathura is a natural seat of the emperorship. Mathura, Hastinapur, Pataliputra, in Bihar, Vikramaditya was in Ujjain, like that. So these are the places, natural places of the emperor. So that's why he's displeased, right? Because then you destroy the whole time. He wasn't thinking. He's thinking that the Pandavas beat him and they killed, so therefore we'll get back him. It's revenge. But his point was, it's bigger than, it's not about revenge. It's about who's running the kingdom. Right? It's not as such a personal thing. It's that he's a Kshatriya, he's making his move to be the emperor. And then Yudhishthira is there as the, in his view, the opposition. But it's not as such a personal fight. Right? That's low class. This is just, you go in there, you make your bid, whoever comes out on top, hey, you win.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
It means
Ashwatthama just got caught up in the moment and didn't make a good decision. Like that, Because they came up with this idea. Because the war was over. So they could have just at that point just, been finished and all that. But then they came up with the brilliant idea of going and killing everybody in their sleep, which is just not done. Because there was a huge amount of the Pandava side of the army left. Great warriors and everything, Dhrishtadyumna and so many others. But somehow they got the idea that we'll destroy him in the night. This way we'll win. And then Duryodhana will be pleased. But then it's like nobody wins. It's like one of these art house films. It's just nobody wins. It all falls apart and everything's, lost. So they killed everybody who was left in the camp. Only who got out? The Pandavas, Krishna, Satyaki, they stayed the night in Duryodhana's camp, because that's a tradition. You defeated them, so you stay that night in their camp, while all his army stayed in his own camp. So then when Ashwatthama, Kritavarma, wasn't Satyaki, he was part of the thing. No, Satyaki, it was those three. Wasn't it? Kripacharya. Okay, Satyaki was with the Pandavas. Okay, so then they went through and killed everybody who was left on that side. So there's quite a lot left. How much, I don't know. Maybe Mahabharata gives a number, but it's like that. But, and then also the son, what was his name? He's one of the, in Gita he mentions as one of the Maharatis. But he's the son of Dhritarashtra by a maidservant. So he's a half-brother. So he was sent back after the war. Yuyutsu. Yeah, he was sent back after
the when the battle finished, to go take care of Dhritarashtra and Gandhara, like that, because otherwise there's no sons left, all 100 are killed. So he technically is a son, so therefore he goes and takes care, like that. So then he wasn't there either. So therefore the Pandavas, Satyaki, and Kritavarma, what do you call it? Kripacharya, Ashwatthama, and Yuyutsu. They're the only ones that survived the whole battle.
The son of Dhritarashtra greatly disapproved of the heinous act, however. When Draupadi heard how her sons had been murdered, she cried aloud in great distress. To pacify his beloved wife, Arjuna declared, "When I present Ashwatthama's head to you, after severing it with arrows released from my Gandiva bow, I will wipe away the tears from your eyes. Then, after the cremation of your sons' bodies, when you have a bath while standing upon Ashwatthama's head, you will surely become relieved of your grief."
Romantic.
Yes. I mean, this is Shakti. Yeah. they got a different standard. In his purports, because the idea was that she's only going to, I mean, you have a few things going on here. Because her hair has been loosened from the gambling match. She hasn't tied her hair since that time. Because her point is she's only going to tie it after, you know, Duryodhana is dead. Like that. So now this would be that the lamenting for the sons, can you do the funeral rites, after that you take your bath. But this bath would be special, and it's on Ashwatthama's head. Then after that she'll tie her hair.
Okay.
So then, you know. Yes, this is Kshatriyas. Yeah, they're in their own category.
Right? Yes. Where is Duryodhana's farm? Is one of his thighs broken?
He's there next to some, that lake or something that he originally was hiding in. Like that. In his purports of this section, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes the importance of the Lord's pastimes. Lord Krishna is so kind to the fallen souls that he personally incarnates himself amongst the different kinds of living entities and takes part with them in daily activities. So it's not just anything, but, you know, just whatever activities they do. Any historical fact, old or new, which has a connection with the activities of the Lord is to be understood as a transcendental narration of the Lord. So it doesn't matter what time. So here we have these narrations 5,000 years ago, but there's narrations when we talk about the creation that go back 151 trillion years ago. And then there's everything in between. So it doesn't matter how new it is, how old it is. Lord Chaitanya is 500 years ago. You know, so it doesn't matter. It's timeless. Without Krishna, all the supplementary literatures like the Puranas and Mahabharata are simply stories of historical facts. Right? So it's because the Lord's pastimes are there and there's a connection with that therefore then they become important. Otherwise they're just more stories about people who are dead. They don't care and nobody else cares, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, who cared? How many people cared about history, right? Most people don't. It's one of those very few, yeah, you know. Yeah. But with Krishna, they become transcendental. And when we hear of them, we at once become transcendentally related with the Lord. Transcendental topics of the activities of Lord Krishna in Srimad Bhagavatam begin from the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, where the Lord himself spoke about himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendental topics of Lord Krishna. So Gita's ending with this, Bhagavatam starting with this. The Gita is Krishna Katha, or topics of Krishna, because it is spoken by the Lord. And the Bhagavatam is also Krishna Katha because it is spoken about the Lord. But these are, so by the Lord or about the Lord, these both become Krishna Katha. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to be informed of both Krishna Kathas by his order. Because otherwise then people will say, you know, only Bhagavatam, Gita is just philosophy, but that's by Krishna, that should also be studied. Srila Sutta Goswami continued, after comforting Draupadi with such heroic statements, yes, Arjuna put on his armor and mounted his chariot, which is fully armed with weapons, right? In other words, you have to do something. There's no question. You have to say something, you have to do something. This concept that just being quiet, everything will go away, doesn't actually work like that.
Why Arjuna?
Huh?
Why Arjuna?
Why Arjuna?
She had five husbands.
Because you're dealing with Ashwatthama. And Ashwatthama, his expertise was celestial weapons. Right? So then, you know, you have that danger. Because Yudhishthira was the javelin, which you put mantras on. But the javelin, Bhima's club, the twins are sword. Right? But Ashwatthama is the divine weapons, because he learned from his father, Dronacharya. So he got all those divine weapons. But you know, and being a Brahmin, then that's much more suitable, because you don't have to physically be, you know, strong like Bhima or all these things. It's your javelin, your swords, your clubs require much more physical strength. You know, otherwise, if you're not physically strong, how far do you shoot a javelin? Right? You know, not that far. Right? So then Arjuna was expert at all of them. So that's why Arjuna would naturally be the one to come. Right? Yes? Plus, there's also a more of a special connection with Draupadi and Arjuna. Right? You know, it's just kind of understood. It's a fault, as we'll see later. But, you know, because the point is, because she's married all five, it should be equal. But it's there, and it's, you know, nobody's complaining, because Arjuna is Arjuna. Lord Krishna took up the reins for his intimate friend, and thus they set out after the Brahmana's son. When Ashwatthama saw Arjuna coming from a great distance, he urged his horses on so that his chariot raced at great speed. After some time, however, Ashwatthama's horses became exhausted, right? Because these others, you're dealing with, you know, divine horses, so, you know, heavenly horses, so then they're not going to run out as quickly. You know, at some point they do. And so he considered that there was no alternative for protection than to employ his ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra, 74. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to 1719. The word Dvijatmaja is significant here because Ashwatthama, although the son of Dronacharya, was not exactly a qualified Brahmana. The most intelligent man is called a Brahmana, and it is not a hereditary title. Ashwatthama was also formerly called the Brahma Bandhu, or the friend of a Brahmana. Being a friend of a Brahmana does not mean that one is a Brahmana by qualification. A friend or son of a Brahmana, when fully qualified, can be called a Brahmana, and not otherwise. Since Ashwatthama's decision is immature, he is purposely called herein the son of a Brahmana. It doesn't mean he won't become, but just at this point he's immature, so he's not acting in that natural way. Right? Because, you know, just how he's dealt. His fighting in the battlefield, the Kurukshetra and all that, then that's not ideal, because the Brahmins won't get involved, right? His father, if he hadn't gotten involved, Ashwatthama hadn't gotten involved, then these things wouldn't be coming up. There wouldn't be these aspects. But they did get involved, so that is not ideal, right? His father gets involved, okay, because he's the teacher, he's the trainer, and that, so it's a little bit more. But Ashwatthama, he's getting involved because his father's there, but his own maturity is not much. And then we see by how his decisions at the end, then this is not what you call ideal. Of course, it is time for whoever's left, basically, in the army. These are all the demigods, right, that came to take part in the Lord's pastime. So being demigods, at some point they have to go, right? And so then this is one way to arrange it. But we see that then it's also, you know, a very interesting, unique arrangement for the rest of the Yadu dynasty to go, you know, like that. So it's not, because who can kill them? No one can kill them, because they're demigods, right? Who here, other than, like, say, Arjuna, can fight with the demigods, right? Arjuna and Bhishma, basically that's it. Right, we never see Karna fighting on behalf of the Gandharvas captured him, and they're not the most powerful, right? You know, and Arjuna is dealing with the, you know, what's it, Nivatikavachas, which even Indra and his army can't defeat, and he goes out there alone and defeats them, right?
So basically Arjuna and Bhishma, that's it. Mm-hmm. So who's going to get rid of them? Right. That. So Ashwatthama comes up with this bright idea, and then he's empowered by Lord Shiva. That's how they can be killed. And then from that, they go back to their positions on the heavenly planets. So it's not that it was a problem for them, because at some point they have to go. Like that. So this is just one way. But so we can say, no, but they had to go, and so therefore Ashwatthama, no. But the point is it's how they're going is not an ideal situation. So he doesn't have to take part. Someone else can do it, right? You know, they can, you know, choke on a peanut or something. You know what I'm saying? You know, like that. He doesn't have to take part, right? Yeah. But that he took part, then he gets the blame.
Okay. Yeah. It wouldn't work. Choking on a peanut.
A big peanut. Very big.
Celestial.
Celestial peanut. No. Okay. I tried.
Yeah, it seems to be. That's why before he's called the Brahma Bandhu. So you're seeing Dvijatmaja in the connection of Brahma Bandhu. That's what Prabhupada's making this connection. Because otherwise, before he was called the Brahma Bandhu. And so now he's called son of a Brahma. But then, being the son of, we understand that means son of in the way of Dvija Bandhu, as friend. You know, so the son or a friend. You know, it means, you know, they're in that, they like being with Brahmins and all that, but they don't have the qualification. So technically, one doesn't use that term if someone is showing positive development, even though they're immature, but there's positive development, like the child is in the Gurukul. He's not as such technically a Brahmana, right? Mm-hmm. Means he has potential, like that. But, you know, it's just like, let's say, the high court judge's son is going to law school, right? He's not a judge, he's not a lawyer, but you don't want to say he's friend of, you know what I'm saying? Because there's that positive thing. Does that make sense? Like that. Now, if he grows up and then he gets his, you know, he passes his degree and then he opens his practice and he specializes in getting, you know, drug cartels off the hook, then he's a Dvija Bandhu. You understand? Because he missed the point. You know, justice is supposed to be used in a certain way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. Okay. After touching water for purification, Ashwatthama concentrated upon chanting the mantras for releasing that supremely powerful weapon, although he did not know how to retract it. So that's another symptom of immaturity. Why use a weapon you can't retract? Because, okay, say he defeats Arjuna, but then you can't retract it. Now what's going to happen with it? You know, so there might not be a whole lot left to deal with. So what's the point of winning?
Yes.
You know, so he's not mature at this point in his thinking, but
he just didn't learn it yet.
Sorry,
he just didn't learn it yet how to retract.
No, like that. It means he's learning because Brahmastra is your ultimate weapon, so that would be the last one he's learned. So he only knew how to release it; he hadn't learned how to retract it. So I guess the war started, so he didn't know like that. You know, just like Abhimanyu knew how to get into the chakra vyuha, but not how to get out. Thereafter, a glaring light was seen to spread in all directions. When it became very intense, Arjuna fearfully said, "Oh my Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus you alone are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone in the flames and material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only. You are the original personality of Godhead, who expands himself all over the creations and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge, And yet, though you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation characterized by religion and so on for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. So even though he's beyond everything, he's the only way to get liberation when he comes and performs this pastime. He performs this pastimes within the realm of Dharma, Artha, Karma, and Moksha, so that people can know how to properly perform those in connection with him. Also interesting to notice that here something's going not nice, and he's surrendering to the Lord, offering prayers, seeing his position, seeing his relation, not going, you know, I'm a devotee, why is this happening to me? You know, he's not doing that.
GBC.
Yeah, so like that. Thus, you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are constantly wrapped in meditation upon you. Footnote 75. Oh, here, the last sentence of the last one. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, the word Dvijat Maja, son of a Brahmin, indicates that he was short-sighted. He couldn't see the bigger picture. Right? Means son of a Brahmin, but why it was used means he was short-sighted. Because he could have, now here, he is a warrior on the battlefield, why refer to him as son of a Brahmin? Right? Why not as Ashwatthama the Brahmin? Like Dronacharya, we don't say as son of the Brahmin of his father. You know what I'm saying? You know, Narad Muni, we're not saying as son of a Brahmin. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's being used in this way to indicate that he was short-sighted. He wasn't mature in his how he was viewing. Like otherwise, as we mentioned, why kill the sons of... means you might kill everybody else, but you leave them because they're going to be the next kings. Like that. But even why kill any all the rest of them at all? The war's over. And then again, why release the Brahmastra?
So he's there by association, not qualification.
Yes. Like that. Means there's potential, but it's not to the point of the position that he's taking.
Like that. There's the arrogance of youth.
Yes, that'd be that aspect. Yeah. Yes.
So the Brahmins do fight.
Normally, no, they don't fight. But you'll just see is here Ashwatthama and his father Dronacharya, they're fighting, and Kripacharya. But otherwise, they're not. Because that's the weakness of being involved with kings. Right. If it was Yudhishthira, if they had been on Yudhishthira's side, he would not in any way have asked them or obliged them.
Yeah.
But his point is he wants to win the battle. And Dronacharya, he's the teacher of everyone, so naturally he'll be better. Like that. So he's just looking at that side. You know, that's the sad part. So even though he's working technically under the Brahmins, that he's not exactly. He's doing it to just for his own benefit. He's not really taking shelter, so he's not actually protected. But otherwise, you don't see in other situations generally that they fight. Occasionally, it's not that they don't know. Like many times, the prime minister may be a Brahmin. He knows fighting. So sometimes in a situation, they will take up arms, you know, to defend the king or defend the kingdom or something. But it's a normal thing they won't. They're not expected to. You know, just like the person who does the strategy in the war, it's not expected he'll get out there and fight. He just sits there with the king and works out, okay, we should do this and that. But it's not expected he'll fight. So, footnote 75. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 1725, it appears that the Lord is partial to his devotees. Everyone is related with the Lord. He is equal to everyone, and yet he is more inclined to his own men and devotees. The Lord is everyone's father. No one can be his father, and yet no one can be his son. His devotees are his kinsmen, and his devotees are his relations. This is his transcendental pastime. It has nothing to do with mundane ideas of relations, fatherhood, or anything like that. As mentioned above, the Lord is above the modes of material nature, and thus there is nothing mundane about his kinsmen and relations in devotional service. So it's because of their reciprocation with him, their surrender to him, therefore he reciprocates with them. That's his favor. His mercy goes towards them. Right? It means it could be anybody, but the devotees are surrendering. Like that. So that's the point. Because he's not anybody's father as such, because everybody's non-different from him. At the same time as how you'll be his son, because if he's not the father, how you'll be the son.
like that. But you have these relations. Does that make sense? So that's his transcendental position. How is it that this dangerous effulgence is engulfing all directions? Footnote 76. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 1726. Anything that is presented before the personality of Godhead should be done after due presentation of respectful prayers. That is the standard procedure. Right? And Sri Arjuna, although an intimate friend of the Lord, is observing this method for general information. But if you want to ask something to the Lord, offer prayers first. Don't just walk in and say, hey. but that's the weakness, right? Asking for Mercedes, where are the prayers?
Right? Exactly.
Not there.
No.
Right?
It's a song.
That's the weakness. It just didn't happen.
Have you saved him?
Maybe, but the point is there was no Mercedes-Benz. Lord Krishna replied, this fierce glare is due to Ashwatthama's having released the Brahmastra due to fear of imminent death. Footnote 77. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 1727, the chanter of hymns knew how to apply the weapon as well as how to retract it. That was perfect knowledge. But the son of Dronacharya, who made use of this subtle science, did not know how to retract it. He applied it, being afraid of his imminent death, and thus the practice was not only improper, but also irreligious. Right, because it may damage others, right? It has to be only those who are going to be taking part in the fight, like that. So in this case, it can only affect Arjuna and Krishna. If it affects anyone beyond that, then it's irreligious. As the son of a brahmana, he should not have made so many mistakes, right? One mistake here and there, but this is just one after another. And for such gross negligence of duty, he was to be punished by the Lord himself. Only another brahmastra can counteract this intense heat, and so you must subdue it by releasing your own weapon. Arjuna first touched water for purification. And then, after circumambulating Lord Krishna, he released his Brahmastra. When the energy of the two weapons combined, a great circle of fire covered all of outer space, scorching everyone within the three worlds with its heat. Upon seeing the imminent destruction of all the planets, Arjuna immediately retracted both weapons. Then, with his eyes angrily blazing like two balls of copper, right, his only get to that point. Bhima actually sparks come out of his eyes. He gets so angry. Right, so here they just look like copper, right? He dexterously addressed the son of Drona and bound him with ropes, just like an animal. So it wasn't gross. He got in there very, very quickly and nicely, in a refined way, tied him up. But he tied him up like an animal. But, done with finesse.
Yes.
Yeah. As Arjuna proceeded to take his captive back to the Pandava camp, Lord Krishna said, you should not show mercy by releasing this Brahma Bandhu that has killed innocent boys in their sleep. Such killing on his part was against the codes of warfare, and thus such a cruel and wretched person deserves to be slain. To kill Ashwatthama will be for his own good, because if he goes unpunished, he will have to suffer in hell for his sins. Remember your promise to Draupadi, and kill this murder of your family members immediately. Right? So Krishna is throwing this in for fun. Right? Just to start the whole thing. Yeah. 17-39. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada clarifies Krishna's statement. A life for a life is just punishment. For a person who cruelly and shamelessly lives at cost of others' lives, political morality is to punish a person by a death sentence in order to save a cruel person from going to hell. That a murderer is condemned to a death sentence by the state is good for the culprit, because in his next life he will not have to suffer for his act of murder. Right? Means it also, the persons who are connected with, or others who are not, they feel some satisfaction that, some justice or balance is done. And they may not even feel that, because the life of who was killed is more important to them than the other person. So the retribution doesn't really... But, it's considered. But
that is there for the social understanding. But for the greater understanding of the nature of the soul, then the real benefit is given by the state to that living entity, because then by being killed by the state, you know, in a proper judgment, then he will be freed from that sin. Right? Doesn't mean there won't, that mentality won't be there, but he'll be purified of the sin. Otherwise, then if not, you have that and then being killed and all being so many things. Like he's killed so many people, all that. So by being killed this once, that is removed. Otherwise, he has to go on who knows how many lifetimes to get that paid back. You know what I'm saying? So it's better. And then having been purified, there's a better chance that they could act in a pious way. But if they're not, that mentality will just stay. They won't get purified, and there's every chance they'll just continue it in the future life. So, therefore, by saying, oh, no, but you don't kill him this life, and that's cruel, who knows what he'll do in this next life? You know, or even in this life. Right? Such a death sentence for the murderer is the lowest possible punishment offered to him. And it is said in the Smriti Shastras that men who are punished by the king on the principle of life for life are purified of all their sins, so much so that they may be eligible for being promoted to the planets of heaven, depending on what it is. So here it's not even that sin, but all the sins. So it's not even just that one. Because now if they've murdered somebody, there must be a few backup sins to bring them that they can do such a thing. Right? So you're purified of all that. So what a benefit is given. That's why in the Vedic sense it's not seen as a problem. It's not seen as this is the actual, you know, kindness or welfare, because you're dealing with much greater. But in ignorance of the laws of karma and the laws of nature, then people don't understand this. Yes.
The purification happened because by judgment then
That will be there also, but it's just that it's being done according to the rules, like that, you know. So there is a judgment and there's an execution. So, and it matches the crime. Now, if it doesn't match the crime, of course, then there's going to be a problem all around. But if it matches, then everybody gets benefit. Right? The king is the people are satisfied because the judgment is proper. The king maintains his pure position, and the culprit then gets purified of their sins. So it works out nicely. Yes.
But it seems like a good deal. You kill somebody and you get hanged, and then you get promoted to heaven.
Because you purify the whole sins.
But that's true.
No, but it says you might be. They may be eligible.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because that means they have to be have done some other stuff. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it may be. It's just the point is they're purified. So depending upon, you know, like what Prabhu was saying about his repentance or other things like that, then there may that greatness, great deal of purification is there. Yes, but one shouldn't look at, well, how does that happen? Because the point is what's so valuable about going to the heavenly planets?
For a materialist.
For a materialist, but still, you know, it's still a waste of time. So it's still, they're only getting material solution. Right? They're not actually getting a spiritual solution. Is that exactly?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Execution means always to be angry.
Sorry?
To be hanged. It's execution.
That's one of the popular ones. It depends upon whatever it is. There's other ones.
He wants to kill the thing.
That's also there. I mean, they didn't have a machine. Generally, they just use, you know, something else. So that, I think this side is to the sword. Mm. It's not battle axe. They're better aim. Because over there, they get criminals to do it and stuff. But also criminals in general cases, they're the ones that are brought for you doing the execution, even the Vedic kind of thing. Like that. Or not criminals, outcasts. Like that. And then the person who is executed by, you know, the outcast, then all the furnitures of the criminal is given to the outcast. Like that.
But I think in the West, then they used to use sometimes criminals to do. But in Asia, it's generally people who are skilled with swords. Yes.
They use the butcher.
That I don't know. I mean, it depends upon who you're dealing with. But, you know. But there's all varieties of ways, you know, impaled on a stake, you know, have your head kicked off by an elephant. You know. There's a lot of but generally they match the particular, you know, crime. So that's why Manam gives which one is for what. Like that.
And now I think it is public also.
Yeah. It's some area. If you want to go, you can. But it's not that. It's not in like Central Park or something.
In Russia it is.
It is in Central Park.
It's in the central place of Moscow, just opposite of the beautiful building.
Oh, okay. So that means the what do you call it? All the monks get the best seat.
Hey, pop the popcorn.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, but in the Vedic, you have more of an out of the way. It's a public area, but it's not the... Because those are made beautiful and that. You don't want that kind of vibe. You know, I guess there's that, you know, makes everybody aware of everything. But also those squares are pretty plain. You know, they're just basically the stone. You know, everything's stone. They're not... You know, because their army stands there. And yeah. All the formal things happen there. Yes, public, you know, for those who want to, you know, either those who have an interest or it just, everybody knows that it happened. Because if it happens in public, people talk, gossip goes around, so you don't have to put it in the newspaper, you know, like that.
If your kid is misbehaving, you can take him there and see what's going on.
Yeah, it works.
Sutta Goswami. Sutta Goswami continued his narration. Although Krishna was testing him in this way, Arjuna did not want to kill Ashwatthama. 78 footnote. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura writes in his commentary, footnote continues to the next page. Though incited by Krishna, who was testing Krishna's sense of justice, Arjuna did not want to kill him, even though he had killed his son, Atmahanam, because he was intelligent, Mahan. Right, so he's mature, right? And Ashwatthama, he was immature. Because the point was, is he wouldn't have been... So this is just another thing. He could have either just surrendered or just had a regular battle. You know. He knew the nature of Krishna. Krishna's nature is that, though he is omniscient, he tested devotees in this way in order to show their sense of justice to others. He tests Arjuna, possessor of Dharma, by showing Veera and Raudra, rasas, when he says, you should not release him, right? So Raudra, his anger at injustice, and Veera as, you know, something should be done, you know, be active. Right? So that was his thing, you know, he said, you should not, what did he say? You should not show mercy by releasing this Brahmana, right? Mm-hmm. Such killing on his part was against the codes of warfare, right? So this is Veera. In the same way he tested the gopis, possessors of prema, by showing karma and jnana in such verses as Brartu Shushushanam Shtrinam Paro Dharma. The highest religious duty for a woman is to sincerely serve her husband. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:29-24. Bhavati nam viyogo me nahi sarvatmana tvachit. You are never actually separated from me, for I am the soul of all creation. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:47-29. Aham hi sarvasya bhutanam adhir anto antontaram bahi. Dear ladies, I am the beginning and end of all created beings, and exist both within and without them. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:82-45. He also tested Prithu, Prahlad, and others who were filled with devotion by showing or promising enjoyment and powers to them. Varamcha Mat Kanchana Manavendra Vrishishva. Dear Prithu, you may therefore ask from me any benediction you like. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:20-16. Varam Vrishishvabhi Matam Kama Puro smyaham and then inam. It is my pastime to fulfill the desires of all living beings, and therefore you may ask from me any benediction you desire to be fulfilled. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.52. Diyamanam cha grinanti. Though I offer these benedictions, they do not accept it. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.29.13. So he's already said this before. And then after that he shows, he offers them, but they don't accept. Even his Siddha devotees test others. Thus Sukadeva tests Parikit. In the sixth canto, he tests his knowledge of Siddhanta when he speaks of regular atonements, when Parikit asks the method of getting free of sin. Right, so that's sixth canto. Because the point in sixth canto is that's not for the Vaishnavas, the how you say, atonement is not the actual method. It's hearing and chanting the whole, you know, the Lord's, you know, glories in the association of devotees. That's the only thing that's going to purify anyone. It's the only thing that's going to get devotion. It's the only thing that'll get you free from material attachment. There isn't something else. These other things are for creating a better situation within the material world, right? Better for the criminal, better for the society, right? If the criminal's not there, then people can sleep peacefully, and he gets purified, so he gets elevated to a better position, so he might even become a pious member of the community, right? Because that's the real reformation, right? Is it about this person should reform and become a proper member of the community, or is no, he should suffer? You understand? If it's he should suffer, then there's some weakness on the part of the individuals who think that, right? It's natural, but you know, just like if you, you know, shake a stick at a dog, he growls and shows his teeth. But, you know, it's natural. But it's not very developed. Right?
Yes. It also appears from those verses that Krishna is testing his devotees between personal and impersonal.
Like yes, yes. Or just
one Paramatma and Brahman. So yes. He wants to see which one they take.
Yeah, you have that, or just that is him. Yeah, it's just him as a person that they're attracted to. But here and that with the gopis, you know, it's more just fun. But it's instructive to others. You know that it's there, because otherwise they're that position, it's that it. These things don't matter. So it's not that they don't know he's the Supreme Lord, but it just doesn't matter. You know, but with the others, they know he's the Supreme Lord. But like in Arjuna's case, then that friendship is prominent. But in others, other situations, then it's, they say, it is so much possible in a choice. But it just shows that when one takes up devotional service, there is no other desire. There is nothing else. You know, so Dhruva Maharaj started off with material desire, but at the end, once gained darshan of the Lord, there's no interest anymore. You know, like that. So it's just, it's lost. So devotional service is beyond all material desire for new karma or jnana. So then Krishna's saying he can give anything, but they don't ask for just anything. You know, those who ask for just anything, then, you know, generally there's a lower level of consciousness. In the ninth canto, Sukadeva tests Parikit's eagerness for Krishna's pastime by summarizing those pastimes. Right, because just like, have you seen here? Did he do that here? No. In Mahabharata, they ask him to say the pastimes. So he says, he summarizes the whole Mahabharata in a couple of pages. You know, and then they say, okay, nice. Now, you know, give us more detail about this and this. So then he gives a bigger one, right, that reveals more detail. Then after that, they ask specific questions, you know, on specific things. Then he tells those stories, right? So here again is how eager he is, because otherwise, if he summarizes the pastimes, you know, Krishna is born, you know, to Devaki and that, he goes to Gokul, you know, like this, and then he grows up there with the cows and the cowherd boys, and he has, you know, Rasa dance with the gopis, he lifts Govardhan Hill to protect the, and like that. Then he goes to Mathura, he kills Kamsa, you know, he becomes the king of Dwarka,
you know, then he speaks the Gita on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and like this, and then, you know, he winds up his pastimes and goes. And you go, oh, nice, great, you know, wow, just in time for lunch, fabulous, yeah, you know, hey, you know. But he doesn't. He asks, you know, to explain more, so then the whole time can't go. Because the idea is you don't speak more than what the audience is interested in. Because otherwise, if it is more, then, you know, it's been waste of discussion.
Don't those panels before? Sorry?
Yes.
He tests his steadiness in bhakti by talking of Brahma Jnana. The real meaning is not always in the directly observed events. 134, continuing the footnote. Srila Prabhupada concludes, Lord Sri Krishna encouraged Arjuna outwardly just to test Arjuna's sense of duty. It is not that Arjuna was incomplete in the sense of duty, nor was Lord Sri Krishna unaware of Krishna's sense of duty. But Lord Sri Krishna puts many of his pure devotees to the test just to magnify their sense of duty. All pure devotees come out successful in the respective test by the Lord. Right, so it's not that anybody's ever failed, so they always come out. And then we get the example.
Okay. Relationship, sense of duty is very important, actually.
Yes. That means that's, you could say, your foundation of it, but it's naturally running according to the flow of the, you know, the feelings and the emotions, the interactions and all that. But it will be following the course of the duties. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it's like when the river is flowing, You notice the river and it's, you know, it's got waves or the sounds or, you know, the color or that. You don't notice that. Well, yeah, it's just stuck between these, you know. Oh, the river is forced to run in these particular, you know, you don't stop. Yeah, you know, exactly. It's like that. Yes.
So someone like... someone like Bharat Maharaj, he didn't fail, he just passed it in a unique way, or...
Well, it wasn't so much that it was the Lord's test, because we see in all these the Lord's personally testing. So that'll be a different category. There it's just that he got distracted and didn't notice that he was distracted.
Not in the same way the guru can test his disciple?
Yeah, no, he mentioned there that even a Siddha devotees test others.
Siddha, yes.
Yeah.
It is the duty of the guru to test the disciple?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. It's different, you know. You hear of it coming up. It's quite natural. You know, but generally, you test in something that you know, that they can pass.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's just whether they do, but generally.
To be successful.
Yeah.
I like go to Afghanistan and start a temple. Mix it up.
No, that's just the. Yeah, that was the real underground teaching.
not Rasa Yatra the first couple of years.
No, but I'm saying inside the cave.
Cave to cave.
Yeah, small rock. Okay. This was on. Okay, so then. When he reached the camp, Arjuna brought Ashwatthama before Draupadi, who was still lamenting for the loss of her sons. When Draupadi saw Drona's son before her, bound up with ropes, as a good-hearted woman endowed with faultless behavior, she offered him the respect that is given to Brahmanas. Indeed, she could not bear to see the son of her husband's preceptor bound up like an animal. Draupadi thus pleaded with Arjuna, "Release him, for since he is a Brahmana, he is to be considered our spiritual master." Kripi did not enter her husband's funeral pyre because of possessing a son. "I do not want to see her continually crying like me."
If a Kshatriya offends and enrages the Brahmins, that anger will burn up his entire royal family. Yudhishthira fully supported Draupadi's statements, footnote 79. Whereas Yudhishthira did not agree with Draupadi, did not agree because of sentimentalism, but because she spoke according to scripture. Regarding Draupadi's position, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti writes, right? In other words, she's saying what is the scriptural evidence, but because of her, you know, sentiments, emotions of the woman, she's put it together. But the point is what she's speaking is Shastra. The good quality of her words is seen in the previous six verses. Her words were faithful to Dharma. Release him because the Brahmana is always our guru. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.43. Her words were filled with correctness. His father taught you the military arts. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.44. So then there's something to be, you know, you're supposed to take that into consideration. Her word, okay, so that was... Okay, faithful to Dharma was the first one. Correctness, that he taught the material, the martial arts, so that's how you're in your position, you're in your glory, therefore there should be consideration. Her words are full of mercy. The wife is half the husband. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.45. Her words expressed unwillingness to cause pain to others. Do not cause suffering to the family of your guru. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.46. Her words express sense of calmness, allaying suffering. Do not let her cry like me. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.47. Her harsh words expressed generosity, desiring to benefit the hearer. The angry brahmanas will destroy the kshatriyas. Yes. Her harsh words express generosity. Means that the kshatriyas will be benefited by their proper dealing with the brahmanas. But if not, then they'll be destroyed. So therefore, harsh meaning it's very, you know, direct, very blunt. Right? Like that. If a kshatriya offends and enrages the brahmanas, that anger will burn up the entire royal family.
So she's not worried for them? For their lineage?
That aspect is there, but it's generosity designed to benefit the hearer, right? So the hearer, who's hearing there? They're all kshatriyas. No? Like that, except for Ashwatthama in that group, the five Pandavas and Krishna, they're all playing the roles of kshatriyas. Is that okay? Like that. Plus, we get benefit, then you know that one has to deal nicely. That work? Okay. And then Nakula, Sahadev, Satyaki, Lord Krishna, Arjuna, the ladies, and all others present unanimously agreed with the king. Right? So the point is he's supporting because of that they're scriptural statements, not because just his wife said it, so therefore he's being supported. Right? Yeah.
Let's say if there was
Duryodhana
standing there, they wouldn't say the same.
Well, he's not a Brahmin, so then that first one and last one would definitely go out the window. But then you're one about causing pain to others, then allaying suffering. You know, in other words, why should Gandhari cry like she's crying? You know what I'm saying? Because the point is there's the problem of Ashwatthama, but then the thing is Ashwatthama is connected to others. So Ashwatthama's mother didn't enter the funeral pile because she has a son. If there's no son, then generally you enter the funeral pile. But because there's a son, there was no need. But now if the son dies, then she's just going to be alone. Who's going to take care? So then she's pointing that one out also. Right? But the point is because he's a Brahmin, then you have these elements, because the Brahmins, even no matter what they do, they're not killed. Right? Because that's the rule. That Kshatriyas on down might be, but Brahmins aren't. You know, if it's that bad, then you just banish them from your kingdom. That's the worst you can do to a Brahmin. You know, just they can't stay in your kingdom, so they have to pack up and leave. You don't take their stuff, you don't do anything, you just send them out. Yes.
And lady's intelligence works even when emotion is there?
Yeah, the intelligence works when the emotion is there.
It's like that.
Yes. Bhima vehemently disagreed, however, and recommended that Ashwatthama be immediately killed. But it means if he had gone out, that he would have killed him out there.
Yes.
And just brought back only a head.
Right? Time for your bath.
Huh?
Time for your bath.
Yes. While Bhima appeared to strike Ashwatthama and Draupadi, endeavored to restrain him. Lord Krishna, although two arms, suddenly manifests another two arms while intervening. You know, because Bhima is strong. And you know, it's also just more fun. 40-52. In his purport to 1743, Srila Prabhupada nicely summarizes the different perspectives on the situation. Arjuna arrested Ashwatthama, knowing perfectly well that he was the son of Dronacharya. Krishna also knew him to be so, but both of them condemned the murderer without consideration of his being the son of a brahmana. According to revealed scriptures, a teacher or spiritual master is liable to be rejected if he proves himself unworthy of the position of a guru or spiritual master. A guru is also called an acharya, or a person who has personally assimilated all the essence of Shastra and has helped his disciples to adopt the ways. Ashwatthama failed to discharge the duties of a brahmana or teacher, and therefore he was liable to be rejected from the exalted position of a brahmana. On this consideration, both Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna were right in condemning Ashwatthama. But to a good lady like Draupadi, the matter was considered not from the angle of Shastric vision, but as a matter of custom. By custom, Ashwatthama was offered the same respect as offered to his father. It was so because generally the people accept the son of a Brahmin as a real Brahmin, by sentiment only. Factually, the matter is different. A Brahmin is accepted on the merit of qualification and not on the merit of simply being the son of a Brahmana. But in spite of all this, Draupadi desired that Ashwatthama be at once released. And it was all the same a good sentiment for her. This means that a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. These are the characteristics of one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. So then again, here's bringing out the pure devotion of Draupadi and the Pandavas. But in Mahabharata, you won't catch that. You'll just, you know, they're good, they're religious, they're dharmic. But how can they be in these situations? Right? It's because they're devotees. Right? So Bhagavatam will bring that out. But the Mahabharata doesn't bring it out. So by having the understanding from the acharyas as in their comments, right, then we can go back and look and then see these elements. Yes?
So according to their Brahma, according to quality, why did she...
They said by custom. Because by custom you can also, the same rules apply. It's just that when you're applying them on Dharma, then that will be the higher platform, right? And then custom will be how people apply that. You know, just like, let's say, in the wedding ceremony, when the wife is going to pour the puffed rice into the fire, then the groom holds both of her hands with his right hand. So, you know, like in South, because everything's formal and everything, you know, very much just the rules and that, you know, nicely, it's very clean and pure. He stands on her side and puts his hand there while the mantras are said. Then she pours. But like in Bengal, you know, the application here is he stands behind her and puts his hands around her. So you get kind of more of that kind of romantic element, like that. But the in South they just don't do that because it's a ceremony. Why, you know, what is romance got to do with it? Sorry.
Why is Bengal so copulated?
Yeah, it could be also more romance.
yeah. that definitely could be. Right there. Yeah, I mean, of all the states, I think it has the most population. You know, yeah, it's one of the smallest. Never did that in that way. Yeah. Okay. So that's custom. Does that make sense? That's custom. It's not that the law says it has to be done that way. It gives the principle, and then the detail will come out according to how they practice it locally. Does that make sense? Yeah. But it's based on Shastra. And the only way that she could have based it on Shastra is because she's a devotee and therefore tolerant personally. Otherwise, then, you know, she wouldn't at that time. Because before it was Ashutama's there, he's done this, he's not there, so it's just her and her husbands. So she's behaving as a wife, they're responding as husbands. So therefore they're following all the duties there. But now that he's come there personally there, the Brahman is there, then you bring into consideration of the Brahman. That's why when they went out, they were just considering that he's not acting in his position. And they're in positions of authority to judge that. Right, but she's not putting her position, herself in a position of that authority. You know what I'm saying? Because Arjuna can, or Yudhishthira can, make judgment on how a Brahman is behaving. Is he behaving as a Brahman, so he should continue as a Brahman? Or should he either bring up his standard, or he should change? You know, say a Brahman's doing business. And there is opportunity for him to maintain himself as a Brahman, not as a businessman. So then the king will say, so are you going to go back to the brahminical duties or are you going to remain as a business person? So if he remains as a business person, then he'll be reclassified as a business person. Right? But if he's a Brahmin doing business and there's not another opportunity, then he's still classified as a Brahmin. That's why Manu gives 3 pages of Brahmanas who are doing other duties than what they're supposed to be doing, that they're not invited to a shraddha, but they're still counted as Brahmins. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why you have to balance all these things. You have to see the situation. Right? Sutta Goswami continued. While gazing at Arjuna's perplexed face, Lord Sri Krishna smilingly declared, a Brahma Bandhu should not be physically harmed, but if he becomes an aggressor, he must be killed. But, my dear Arjuna, you must fulfill your promise to Draupadi and at the same time abide by these rulings of Shastra. In addition, you should act in a way that both Bhima and I become satisfied. Right? So you put in all the elements. Right? Is that, you know, you should fulfill your promise that he said he would come with his head. Right? Or, you know, that she would kill him. At the same time, he should abide by the rulings of Shastra. It says a Brahma Bandhu should not be physically harmed. Right? That's the rule. It comes up many times in Manu that it, no matter what, they're just not harmed. Right? And so, but at the same time, you know, it says that if he's an aggressor, right, because he says there, even if you're attacked by your preceptor, this or that, you can defend yourself. So if in that process they become killed, it's not a sin because they were an aggressor. You know what I'm saying? So you have that. So he said that he's not supposed to kill him. There's supposed to be no physical harm, not physically harmed. At the same time, he promised to Draupadi and Bhima. You know, Bhima once, but then Krishna, otherwise Bhima will look alone, so Krishna says, you know, I'm also, you know, the both of us. Okay, footnote 80. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 1.7.53.54, Krishna says, no Brahmana should be killed, but Manu has said that if an aggressor approaches with the desire to kill, he can be killed, even if he's learned in Vedanta. Right? Follow both of these instructions ordered by me, the maker of scriptures. Since Ashutama is still considered a Brahmana, and since he is not an aggressor, since he does not have a weapon in his hand, he should not be killed, right? Because an aggressor means at that moment. Right? Now, like Ashutama, let's say he comes into the place where they're sleeping at night. If someone had a weapon, then if they had killed him at that time, you're not killing a Brahmana. You know, I mean, he's an aggressor, so you've killed an aggressor. He may have happened to have been a Brahmin, but this detail supersedes the general rule. The general rule is you don't kill a Brahmin, but you can kill an aggressor. You understand? But now he's not an aggressor. He has no weapon. He's not come to attack. So he's a Brahmin, and he's not an aggressor. So there is no rule that you can kill him. Right? This is my opinion. I told you previously to kill the fallen Brahmin, but that was only to test you. Therefore, do not kill the fallen Brahmin, but free him. Then I have said that the knower of Dharma does not kill the enemy who is frightened or without a chariot. And also I have said it is best to kill him. But do not be the cause of killing him. His killing should take the form of being bound up. That is the real meaning of my words. Right? So he should be bound. Right? You made a promise to bring Draupadi, the head of Ashwatthama. Thus you should cut off his head. You should also please Bhima. You should also please Draupadi, who does not want him killed. You should also please me and others because they are dear to me.
Changing from moment to moment.
Yes, but that's the fun. Is Krishna's doing this on purpose, showing one, and then showing the exact opposite, and then showing back this way, then it gets opposite again. Right? So his point of killing means he's being, you know, he's being bound up. So by being insulted means by. The rule of killing a Brahmin, also insulting a Brahmin, is considered equal. Right? If you remember, there were the five principal sins. So then, along with that, then there was how do you call it? The things that were equal to, one of them was blaspheming the Brahmin. You know, just like equal to intoxication is blaspheming the scriptures. Like that. Right? Or killing, and equal to killing a Brahmin is killing a cow. So you have all these ones that are equal to, but there's the main heading. Like that. Okay. Although Krishna spoke equivocally, Arjuna could understand his intention. And so, with his sword, he severed both the hair and jewel from Ashwatthama's head. Because that's one of the things, when someone does something, if you want to, how you say, publicly humiliate them, then one of the things they do is cut the hair. Right? Like that.
On the sika.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. The son of Drona had already lost his luster due to his infamous act. And now, with the loss of his jewel, his strength became greatly diminished. Ashwatthama was then untied and driven out from the Pandava camp. Right? So he's been insulted, so that's equal to killing. So now, therefore, his original point to Draupadi and Bhima, yes, right, have now been taken care of. But now his position as a Brahmin, that's also been maintained. And then now he's driven out from the Pandava camp. You know, it's not that they sat down and, you know, told old stories and stuff. No, he's driven out because he's banished. So that can be done. Which, for such a hero, was a humiliation worse than death. Because you died on the battlefield, you die in the fight. That's there. But here, you know, you did something improper and then you're humiliated and then let go. So then that's considered worse.
Why didn't they consider the point of revenge? That he would revenge after.
Why would he revenge?
Being humiliated, he's a Kshatriya.
No, he's not a Kshatriya, he's a Brahmin. But, no, but the point is, how would he retaliate?
He still knows his celestial weapons.
But he already pulled the best one out of the bag and it didn't work. Means below that, everything else is less powerful.
Yeah. Right? He killed the boys in their sleep. He can do the same.
But based on what? He could based on what?
On his spirit of revenge.
But does he have a spirit of revenge? Because his killing those at night weren't a matter of revenge as much as it was he was trying to please Duryodhana. He thought Duryodhana would please him. He's not that he says, you know, I'm not letting these guys get the upper hand with me. You know, I'm Ashwatthama, I'm better than, you know. It was about Duryodhana. So, therefore, for himself, there wouldn't be any such sense. You know what I'm saying? So he hasn't shown that. Plus, the thing is when you're dealing with Brahmins, there is the element of that there's training. They know what's right.
Yeah.
And so then it's a matter of them understanding and thinking about it. The reason that in others it's not given that position so easily is because, like for Kshatriyas, they just don't forgive. Right? So here, for Draupadi and these others to forgive means they're devotees. So only devotees can do it, if they're in the other varnas. Right? Brahmins can do it whether they're devotee or not. Right? But the other varnas can actually only do it if they're devotees. You know, and then specifically your pure devotees. So how much they come to the platform of pure devotion is how much they'll be able to forgive. Right? Does that make sense? So that's one of the prominent qualities of a Brahmin is forgiveness. Does that make sense? So, in other words, certain elements of here he's showing immaturity, but it's not necessarily in all aspects. Right? You have to consider other elements. You know, does he do his duties nicely as a Brahmin? Does he, you know, his sadhana, his cleanliness, his truthfulness, his dealing with the scriptures and all those. If those are all in place, then you have to, that has to be part of the calculation. Not that, oh, now he's done this, now he's not a Brahmin at all. But who's saying that? From what? From what position? Is it Shastra? Is it other qualified Brahmins saying it? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? If he's saying, you know, because you can't say, oh, they're not Vaishnavas, but we're Vaishnavas. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't work. Point is if you're Vaishnav, then why you wouldn't consider that aspect in them? Right? And if you're saying, well, they're not a Brahmin, are you therefore materially qualified as a Brahmin to make that statement? Or at least qualified as a trained king? You know, that you know how to identify. But if you're it's Vaishya and Shudra background, then how can you make a comment at all? You know what I'm saying? It's probably the point is first do what they do, then you can comment. You know, like when one devotee would complain about the temple president, Prabhupada's point, well, first you be able to do what he can do, then you can comment about what he's doing. Otherwise, you don't say anything. Those people who are doing what he can do, they'll make the decision. And it's not your business to say, you know, you have to do it. I mean, who are you? You know, so that's the thing. So Prabhupada would always support leadership because it's a matter of fact. So in this case, then, who can do what he's done? Now, Arjuna has done what he's done. He studied under his guru. He was the best student. Like that, he's done everything properly. He knows the Shastra. And Krishna is the origin of the Shastra. So these two can judge. You know, Dharmaraj, he can judge because he judges everybody in the universe. Right? And so then, you know, these three have their, you know, opinion. You know. Does that make sense? So, therefore then, you know, they'll do the right thing. Because then also, Kshatriyas, they're working on Dharma, not Niti. Right? Now, Niti is, you get rid of everybody and everything, you know. Therefore, the Chinese, you know, circle of 10, you know, because therefore anybody could come back and get you. But in these kind of things, it's not the thing. That's why you act according to Dharma. If you always act according to Dharma, why someone would use Niti? Right? That's the reason that the king comes in, he defeats the other kingdom. Right? But because he's done it according to religious rules, then he can install the son of that same king that he killed on the throne, and they'll have a proper relationship. Might not, depending on the quality of the individual. You know, but if he's also a qualified Kshatriya, then he'll, you know, he's more powerful, that's all. You know, it's not he killed my father. No, they're Kshatriyas, they fight, it happens, and he was the more powerful. Therefore we're vassal to him. Does that make sense? So you have this sense of duty that can be followed in relationships that generally isn't so common in the, you know, the, how you say, the molecular context. Descendants of Adama are, you know, the Adama means, you know, falling, so you know, you just, you know, very fallen. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So Maharaj, if we compare with Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita in the first chapter where he was confused and using morality, here he's quite, he passed the test.
He passed the test. Because there is that, all those different things are coming up. First is just all the, just the niti is I kill the relatives who am I going to enjoy with. Yeah. You know, and then other aspects and morality and dharma, he uses all these things, but devotion is the highest. Yeah. So having understood that, then you apply the others how they will support devotion. Right now, Krishna wanted him killed, then you could you would do it the other way. But yeah. The point is Krishna doesn't, because shastras are naturally, as Krishna thinks, that's how the shastras are defined. So that's his point. And, you know, and myself being the, you know, the one who made the Dharma, so therefore. Is that? Yes.
The jewel is then what Draupadi will be standing on as she takes her bath. The jewel is like his head, or?
I don't know if they worry about those kind of details at this point.
Kind of faded out as
yeah,
we went along.
Because there's also this, there's also a point that comes up, it's called, I don't want to talk about it. Yeah, so at that point you just leave it. You don't say, no, but what about the head?
Yes, okay. No, I was thinking about the head.
Yeah, so it's just, now she's moved on, so she doesn't want to think about it. Because then the head means that she has to think about her sons, all this kind of thing. So now it's moved on, and so now it's like this, and so they have to move on with their life.
And they should just be happy.
Yes. Thereafter, the Pandavas and Kurus went to the banks of the Ganga to offer water to the departed souls of their relatives. 53-58. So, questions? And then, chapter 8. Prayers by Queen Kunti and Parikshit say. So, in other words, pleasing the Lord and the devotees, that's your actually highest principle. And so, but it's always in line with Shastra. Because that means the Lord has given the scriptures. The Lord acts according to scriptures. So you please the Lord through scriptures. But it's pleasing the Lord that's important, not the scriptures. Therefore, then the point with Yudhishthira of asking him to lie on the battlefield. You know, which is more important, pleasing Krishna or following the scriptures? Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? It's not that following the scriptures is not important. It's just that you have to know that the more important is pleasing Krishna. So if in your following scripture you're not pleasing Krishna, you have to adjust your mentality or adjust which aspects of scripture you're dealing with. Or how you're applying it. Right? And that prayaschitta doesn't apply within Vaishnavas, right? Yes. The prayaschitta it works in a different way.
Yes.
Prayers by Queen Kunti and Parikshit say, Pratigya, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.24. My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought, and now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashwatthama. From the purport. The list of dangerous encounters is submitted herein. Devaki was once put into difficulty by her envious brother. Otherwise, she is well. But Kunti Devi and her sons were put into one difficulty after another for years and years together. Oh, but she was well. Right? So there's one difficult situation, but Kunti is just over and over and over again. Yeah? They are put into trouble by Duryodhana and his party due to the kingdom, and each and every time the sons of Kunti were saved by the Lord. Once Bhima was administered poison in a cake. Once we were put into the house made of shellac and set afire. And once Draupadi was dragged out, and attempts were made to insult her by stripping her naked in the vicious assembly of the Kurus. The Lord saved Draupadi by supplying an immeasurable length of cloth, and Duryodhana and his party failed to see her naked. Similarly, when they were exiled in the forest, Bhima had to fight with the man-eater demon Hidimba Rakshasa, but the Lord saved him. So it was not finished there. After all these tribulations, there was the great battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna had to meet such great generals as Drona, Bhishma, and Karna, all powerful fighters. And at last, even when everything was done away with, there was the Brahmastra released by the son of Dronacharya to kill the child within the womb of Uttara. And so the Lord saved the only surviving descendant of the Kurus, Maharaj Brigid. So I guess that's your revenge. Chapter 8 summarizes questions and answers. Questions 13 and 14 of the Srimad Bhagavatam are asked by Queen Kunti of Lord Krishna. Question 13, Srimad Bhagavatam 1820. You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service under the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? But he's talking about the transcendentalists and these great, you know, intellectuals who are purified by being able to discriminate with matter and spirit. Question 14, Srimad Bhagavatam 1837. Oh my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. Are you leaving us today, though they are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us? Now when all the kings are at enmity with us. Right? But it means he's doing all the duties, right? So then now you protect the dependent, but they are going away. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 8th chapter describes how Krishna protected Prakrit from the Brahmastra, Queen Kunti's prayers to Krishna, and Maharaj Yudhishthira's lamentation. Just after Lord Krishna and the Pandavas performed the funeral rituals for the relatives killed in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna prepares to leave for Dwarka. Suddenly, Uttara approaches Krishna in great fear. Ashwatthama has hurled another Brahmastra, targeting it to kill the unborn child within a womb. Krishna, as the Supersoul, covers the embryo from within and saves Uttara. After Krishna saves Uttara and her embryo, Kunti, the mother of the 5 Pandavas, approaches Krishna along with her sons and offers her obeisances. After glorifying the Lord, Kunti describes his descent and greatness, and wonders how she can possibly understand his unfathomable position. Kunti retells how the Lord protected her and her family during their calamitous years of exile. She then asserts that only one who has no material shelter can easily approach Krishna. Kunti speaks about the mysterious nature of Krishna's birth and activities, as well as the reason for his advent. The mother of the Pandavas begs Krishna to remain in Hastinapur, as the welfare and opulence of the Pandava kingdom depend upon his continued presence. She then expresses her desire to sever her affection to all others but Krishna. And then, while offering her obeisances to the Lord, declares her complete dependence upon him. After Kunti enters her prayers, Krishna again attempts to leave Hastinapur. Maharaj Yudhishthira, overwhelmed by the death of his kinsman, approaches Krishna in a dejected mood and is filled with lamentation. Shloka Anusharan, summary verses. Verses 1 through 16, Krishna again saves his devotees. Verses 17 through 43, the prayers of Queen Kunti. And verses 44 through 52, Krishna accepts Kunti's prayers and hears the distressed words of Maharaj Yudhishthira. It means that one's not dependent upon the material situation. It's that one is, because one doesn't identify with it. One simply identifies as servant of Krishna. So it's not that the material situation is what makes it that you can serve Krishna. It's that you'll serve Krishna by remembering, chanting, whatever the situation is. Like that. It can be either. It doesn't matter if they have all facility or they have no facility. It doesn't matter. It's how they look at it, you know. Like that. So there's no sense of I and mind, right? That I am the body and all that connected with the body is mine. verses 116. Krishna again saves his devotees. Srila Sutta Goswami continued his narrative about the activities of Lord Sri Krishna and his beloved eternal associates, the Pandavas. Quote, after completing the prescribed Vedic observances for the souls of their family members, who departed this world in the Kurukshetra conflict, the Pandavas sat down by the riverside, overwhelmed with grief. Lord Krishna and the great Rishis present tried to pacify them with the transcendental balm of spiritual instructions. Verses 1 through 4. Srila Prabhupada summarizes these instructions in his purport to 184. The stringent laws of nature, under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot be altered by any living entity. The living entities are eternally under the subjugation of the Almighty Lord. The Lord makes all the laws and orders, and these laws and orders are generally called dharma or religion. No one can create any religious formula. Bona fide religion is to abide by the orders of the Lord. That's why it says God makes religion. Right? You can't make up something. You know, so even if you think that you're putting something together yourself, if it's working, it's because it's following the laws of God. So therefore the nature of anything, right? Just because I observe the thing and understand the laws doesn't mean I've made the laws. Right? You know?
They get that confused in the West. They get that confused in
the West. Yeah, yeah. No, it's not that before Newton, apples just floated around in space and you needed, you know, like a long net on a, catching butterflies or something, you know. You know, hand them the net, you know, go out and get a few apples, you know, like that, you know.
Remember the rope tying yourself with.
Oh, yeah. Okay, they don't fart off with them, yeah. What does that mean if you put them in the pie, the pie floats up also?
There would be a pie in the sky.
Yes. Yes, it would be. Now, what were we talking about? Yes, and then he decided, this is crazy, you know, this is such a trip, I have to go out, so it would be so much easier if they just fall off the tree and I could pick them up off the ground. Therefore, he made Newton's third law, and then from that time on, apples then all hit the ground, right? Is that how it works? No. So, technically, you know, he can be for having discovered it, but it doesn't mean that they created it. God creates it. So dharma is established by the Lord. Yes. No one can create any religious formula. Bona fide religion is to abide by the orders of the Lord. The Lord's orders are clearly declared in the Bhagavad Gita. Everyone should follow him only, or his orders, and that will make all happy, both materially and spiritually. As long as we are in the material world, our duty is to follow the orders of the Lord. And if, by the grace of the Lord, we are liberated from the clutches of the material world, then in our liberated stage also we can render transcendental loving service unto the Lord. Right? Because the point of following the laws of God is to please God. So in the spiritual world, the point is also to please God. It's always about the same thing. Right? Being engaged in devotional service. So those principles are always what's at work, whether they're directly understood or not. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. In our material stage, we can see neither ourselves nor the Lord for want of spiritual vision. But when we are liberated from material affection and situated in our original spiritual form, we can see both ourselves and the Lord face to face. Mukti means to be reinstated in one's original spiritual status after giving up the material conception of life. Right, so that's what Madhvacharya is describing. Because if I think I'm the controller and enjoyer, that's not actually, that's the material conception of life. So you haven't given it up. So technically you're not really liberated. Therefore, human life is specifically meant for qualifying ourselves for the spiritual liberty. It's like falling out of a plane. You know, you can fly for a while, but it's temporary. Right? It's not a permanent situation. Right? Unfortunately, under the influence of illusory material energy, we accept this spot life of only a few years as our permanent existence, and thus become illusioned by possessing so-called country, home, land, children, wife, community, wealth, etc., which are false representations created by Maya. illusion. It's kind of like everything's covered, and then they say, etc.
Whatever you come up with.
Yeah. And under the dictation of Maya, we fight with one another to protect these false possessions. By cultivating spiritual knowledge, we can realize that we have nothing to do with all this material paraphernalia. Then, at once, we become freed from material attachment. So when we see that we're not connected with it, we're the soul, and that everything belongs to the Lord, then we give up attachment, material attachment. This clearance of all the misgivings of material existence at once takes place by association with the Lord's devotees, who are able to inject the transcendental sound into the depths of the bewildered heart, and thus make one practically liberated from all lamentation and illusion. Like, so here, clearance of the misgivings of material existence. So misgivings are attachment. Doubt, as we said before, is just, it doesn't make sense.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. But misgiving means there's attachment. So because of that, then one is unable to deal properly. And then, what was the other point? And then, so that goes by association, right? It says immediately. At once takes place. And so then it says, one practically liberated. So technically one is liberated, but just whether one is actually dealing as liberated. Right? Because of conditioning, we still have the habit to deal not in a liberated way. That is a summary of the pacifying measures for those affected by the reaction of stringent laws of nature, exhibited in the forms of birth, death, old age, and disease, which are insoluble factors of material existence. It means they're not going to go away. So these are the pacifying measures. I mean, you can say other things, but ultimately, until this is discussed, it won't work. So we see even Hiranyakashipu, he uses the same method, the same explaining exactly the same thing to his relatives when his brother is killed. Because that's the only method to... Right? So even the demons know you have to use Vedanta to overcome all the difficulties that, you know, that, you know, one comes across in material life. But, you know, it's not that they care about the spiritual side of it. Just its effect that if you understand transcendence, then you can continue with your inspiration with the material endeavor.
Transcendental nitya.
Yes. Like that. The victims of war, namely the family members of the Kurus, were lamenting the problems of death, and the Lord pacified them on the basis of knowledge. Right? So it's only knowledge can pacify. Okay.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shri Prabhupada ki jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki jai Nityananda Gaura Premananda ki
Thank you very much to help us to pacify us by giving knowledge. Quite often, you know, I feel more pacified after the course.
Yeah, well, I mean, that should be. I mean, that's what, you know, the acharyas are saying. When you go from the first 9 canto, actually, then, you know, one should be materially satisfied. One should be spiritually realized.
It is an interesting experience when you're realizing that it's actually working. You read about it working, and then you experience that it's actually working.
That's why we have such a long course before coming to this. Because otherwise, the 3-month course wouldn't give the same effect. You know, so that's the whole thing. Let's see how it works. Yeah. So we get the season 3.
Come for the F1 class?
4. Yeah, so 4 more years. For the 9 camp.
Yeah.
Okay, so work in progress.
Yes.
I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic.
When everyone's realized that we'd all be floating around the room,
it'll just be
not controlled by the modes of nature. You know, like you said, have ropes in back of it.
Bright light everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Have to wear sunglasses.
Yeah.
I think everyone's wearing sunglasses.
The first 3 years of the study,
yeah.
I have to change.
Okay. I didn't get